This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off this week. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on March 17th, 2025.
We're in the middle of a hostile government takeover. I want to talk about it, but I'll be late for work. And if you're saying, wait a minute, who we have to stop this? We have one, but you didn't want the lady in office. Now that we're a part of a Nigerian prince scam, surprise, surprise, it ended up being a white man. Oh, I just want to know, what the hell do I do? Probably drink.
Well, cheers, mate. I want to know what the hell we do, too. Working on it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Nothing.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also, coast to coast and around the globe on dozens of other affiliates, terrestrial and internet, not to mention most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today on another insane edition of the Bradcast, but we are glad to have you here with us.
To be clear, the news is insane, but I think also we're a little bit insane
we'll see.
Because of
yeah,
the news.
Yeah, it is a little troubling today, I must admit. As usual in the Trump era, it has been a very busy several days over the past weekend, as at least 40 people were killed across Missouri, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Alabama, and Mississippi in powerful storm systems that spawned swarms of tornadoes, a phenomenon that has increased as climate change has worsened in recent years. As those storms swept through the Midwest and the South over the weekend, Desi Doyen, your family in Texas, I assume, is doing okay?
Yes, they're fine. Thank you.
As are mine in Missouri today. The most chilling news of the weekend, however, involves immigration, deportation, and the Trump administration's apparent refusal to follow several federal court orders, stepping over a Rubicon that many legal experts have long feared we might see under this Trump administration. Over the weekend, Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 as justification for the deportation of some 300 Venezuelan immigrants that the administration alleges to be members of a dangerous Venezuelan gang. The Alien Enemies Act, however, may only be invoked against declared enemies during a declared war. Trump and his administration are claiming that a wave of migrants coming from Venezuela amounts to a hostile invasion, somehow allowing him to invoke the act, which has only been invoked three times in U.S. history during the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. When it was shamefully used as justification for rounding up and interning thousands of Japanese Americans. Perhaps as troubling, however, the administration appeared to brazenly violate a U.S. District Court judge's order who, after an unusual emergency hearing late on Saturday night, ordered the deportations to stop for 48 hours while the matter was considered, including issuing an order to turn any planes that were in the air around. Nonetheless, the administration did not turn the plane around, and the Venezuelans were delivered to El Salvador, where they have now reportedly been imprisoned by that nation's strongman leader, a close ally of Donald Trump's, with the administration claiming that the court order was somehow given while the plane was already in international airspace. Therefore, it was beyond the reach of a U.S. federal court order somehow. Legal constitutional experts say that's utter nonsense, that as long as the prisoners were still in the custody of the U.S., then they were still under the purview of the U.S. court system. Civil rights attorneys are strongly challenging the claim as the administration nonetheless appears to be laughing at the court and the rule of law itself, with the White House asserting a single judge cannot tell them what to do in regard to immigration policy, and with Trump's far-right radical deportation czar, Tom Holman, telling Fox News when asked what was next, quote, another fight every day. We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think, he said. So, very troubling, as noted, this very well may be the constitutional crisis that many constitutional law experts have long feared and or expected. More on that in the days ahead, I am sure. But we need to begin in earnest here today on another disturbing story, as I have a guest standing by who I am very much looking forward to speaking with. According to Voice of America at voanews.com, back on May 10, 2023, so almost 2 years ago, the first presidentially appointed head of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, the parent agency for Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, and the Middle East broadcasting networks, among others, who broadcast in more than 60 languages around the world, breached editorial firewall regulations, engaged in gross waste of public funds, and abused his authority, according to a 145-page report that was released back in May of 2023 by the Office of Special Counsel. Yes, the OSC found that the first Trump-appointed head of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, or USAGM, had engaged in gross waste and abuse. Uh-oh. Isn't that what Donald Trump and Elon Musk are pretending to be fighting against? The OSC, an independent agency empowered to investigate wrongdoing within the federal government, alerted USAGM in December of 2020, so at the very end of Trump's first term in office, alerted them to a number of allegations of wrongdoing under the leadership of Trump appointee Michael Pack. The expert's report found evidence of gross mismanagement and waste that the agency spent about $1.6 million on an unnecessary contract with a private law firm, and that Pack failed to respect the journalistic independence and integrity of the networks that he was tasked with overseeing. The OSC said it found a, quote, substantial likelihood of lawbreaking by Pack, who abused his power, according to the report, when he improperly suspended security clearances of executives and one management employee, quote, without a legitimate basis. When he violated the International Broadcasting Act by attempting to change bylaws and contracts of CEO-appointed network heads, and violated the Privacy Act by directing employee-related materials to be sent to individuals outside the agency, despite an external law firm telling him that the action could violate the law. David Side, a senior counsel at the Government Accountability Project at the time, a group which represented around 30 whistleblowers during PAC's time as CEO, noted the OSC's bipartisan credentials and described the 145-page report as, quote, breathtaking in its scope. The report gives a detailed accounting of how Pack and his team believed that employees at the Congress-funded news network were biased and untrustworthy, taking actions against some of those same individuals, quote, without a legitimate basis, claiming that they were, quote, anti-Trump. And according to a memo targeting them, quote, hates Republicans and Trump, they said about one of them, and were, quote, not on the Trump team. Some of the biggest concerns during PAC's time related to efforts to dismantle the editorial firewall at Voice of America, which refers to laws and regulations that protect VOA from political interference and mandate the network's under USAGM remain objective in their news coverage. That was Trump's first chief of the USAGM governing the Voice of America and its sister networks. Among the laws that PAC violated or attempted to mandating that Voice of America may not be biased and may not serve as simply American propaganda for any presidential administration. The Foreign Relations Act of 1977, which includes amendments to the U.S. Information and Educational Exchange Act of 1948, mandating that, quote, VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. VOA news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will therefore present a balanced and comprehensive projection of significant American thought and institutions. That is written into law, passed by Congress, signed by the president. That is what VOA and its other critical sister radio outlets, now under the control of the U.S. Agency for of Global Media, are mandated to do. It was those legal mandates adopted by Congress, signed into law by the president, that Donald Trump's first CEO of U.S. AGM was found to have violated repeatedly. And now, flash forward to this past Friday night, as reported by NPR's David Folkenflik over the weekend. Journalists showed up at the Voice of America on Saturday to broadcast their programs, only to be told that they had been locked out. Federal officials had embarked on indefinite mass suspensions. All full-time staffers at the Voice of America and the Office for Cuba Broadcasting, which runs radio and television Marti, were affected. More than 1,000 employees. The move followed a late Friday night edict from President Trump that its parent agency, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, must eliminate all activities that are not required by law. In addition, under the leadership of Trump appointees, the agency has severed all contracts for the privately incorporated international broadcasters it funds, including Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, and the Middle East broadcasting networks. The termination notices for grants for the funded networks carried the signature of Trump's senior advisor, Kerry Lake, whom he placed at USAGM, not the agency's acting chief executive. For some reason, Kerry Lake signed this order. That Kerry Lake, the failed Republican Arizona gubernatorial candidate who still insists that she won the state's 2022 governor's race, despite her arguments rejected by one court after another, including the state Supreme Court. She then went on to lose the 2024 U.S. Senate race in Arizona before failing up to be tapped by Trump to run Voice of America, which she does not yet run, much less its parent agency, USAGM. Lake does not appear in her current job as an advisor to actually have the statutory authority to carry out the terminations that she carried out with her signature on Friday night. Nonetheless, VOA Radio is now off the air, or broadcasting music where news and real programming used to be, for the past 83 years in more than 60 languages around the globe. The network's director, Michael Abramowitz, said in a statement, quote, "I am deeply saddened that for the first time in 83 years, the storied Voice of America is being silenced. Today's action will leave Voice of America unable to carry out its vital mission," adding that he was among those 1,300 journalists, producers, and support staffers who were put on leave. Grant Turner, the former chief financial officer at USAGM, called it Bloody Saturday for the agency and its networks. Quote, "This is shaping up to be a really sad day," he said. USAGM networks share important news, information, and American values around the world. It took decades to build this goodwill and an audience of hundreds of millions every week. Seeing arsonists, he said, just set fire to it all is awful. Steve Kappas, the president of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, said in a statement, quote, "The cancellation of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty's grant agreement would be a massive gift to America's enemies. The Iranian Ayatollahs, Chinese communist leaders, and autocrats in Moscow and Minsk would celebrate the demise of RFERL after 75 years. Handing our adversaries a win would make them stronger and America weaker. Noting that the network has, quote, benefited from strong bipartisan support throughout its storied history. Without us, he said, the nearly 50 million people in closed societies who depend on us for accurate news and information each week will not have access to the truth about America and the world. Taken together, the federally funded broadcasters and their sister networks covering the Middle East and Cuba reached some 420 million people in 63 languages and more than 100 countries each week. They are fully funded by federal dollars under federal law. The network's mission is to deliver news coverage and cultural programming to places where a free press is threatened or does not exist. They're also designed as a form of soft diplomacy, modeling independent journalism that incorporates dissent from government policy, including, by the way, at times even the U.S. government policy, as one might expect from a legitimate independent news outlet. Trump's budget-slashing advisor, Elon Musk, David Folkenflik notes, and other administration officials have called for Voice of America and some of the sister networks to be shut down entirely, with Musk tweeting last month, quote, "It's just radical left crazy people talking to themselves while torching $1 billion a year of U.S. taxpayer money," said Elon Musk, who knows quite a bit about torching U.S. taxpayer money.
He certainly does.
The effort to shut it all down to date, its legality remains in question at this hour, but it does appear to be designed to gut the networks and place whatever coverage survives under tighter control of politically appointed officials like Carrie Lake. We'll ask my guest about that momentarily. But the reporting of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty has vexed autocratic-minded leaders, notes Folkenflik, over the years, in Russia and Hungary, as well as their allies. The network's journalists have been imprisoned or detained in Russian-controlled Crimea, Belarus, Azerbaijan, and in Russia itself. Similarly, Radio Free Asia's report on the oppression of Uyghur Muslims by Chinese authorities helped to bring their plight to international attention. In 2020, North Korean officials executed the owner of a fishing fleet for secretly listening to broadcasts by Radio Free Asia while at sea, according to the network. Authorities brought in 100 of his peers to watch his execution as a warning of the dangers of tuning in to Radio Free Asia. A reporter for the English-language Shanghai Daily, controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, exulted at the developments, quote, "excellent news," he tweeted at the time, calling Radio Free Asia, quote, "one of the U.S.'s most insidious anti-China propaganda outlets." Despite strong criticism from Trump administration officials and their allies on Capitol Hill, the networks have largely won strong bipartisan support over the years. The suspended staffers now include reporters, editors, managers, journalists in the English-language core newsroom in Washington, D.C., and those offering coverage and programming in dozens of languages serving audiences across the globe. Employees at the U.S. Agency for Global Media also received the notification ordering the cessation of all work-related activities and the surrender of all government property, including devices and networks. That's what happened over this past weekend. That after three staffers for Elon Musk's so-called Doge have been camped out at the agency, gaining access to its budget, social media, and other activities, according to several people with knowledge who spoke to NPR anonymously due to potential professional repercussions. On Friday evening, before Trump's order, Carrie Lake posted a video of the new headquarters for USAGM and the Voice of America to argue that it's an example of profligate spending saying, quote, in her video, I'm sitting here on the 13th floor of a shiny, brand new, beautiful skyscraper building that is costing you, the taxpayer, a fortune, she said. Adding, here's the kicker. They already have a building that they're located in, that is paid off, that they could have renovated or updated. But former USAGM Chief Financial Officer Grant Turner says, Carrie Lake's got it backwards. According to the agency's announcement last September, the lease, thanks to a really slow real estate market caused by the pandemic, actually stands to save the federal government $150 million over the next 15 years. Said Turner, quote, it's probably one of the best deals struck by a tenant in D.C. history. Turner left the agency in January. But the new building, he notes, is not actually new. It's nearly two decades old, and the old building was not paid off, as Carrie Lake claimed. The agency does not own it, though it received 3 years of free rent in the new building, the new headquarters, sizably reducing its footprint and rent, and the new building's landlord gave $27 million toward the construction of new state-of-the-art studios that would have been necessary to spend at their old Cohen building.
So Carrie Lake could not have gotten that story any more wrong than she already
Correct.
Did.
Good Correct. Lord. Every single element of it.
All of it a lie.
The de facto destruction of the Voice of America is nothing less than a betrayal of the ideas that gave birth to the institution and made it relevant throughout World War II, the Cold War, and in the decades after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, said longtime VOA correspondent Steve Herman, its national correspondent, at least until being placed on leave in late February for reasons that remain unclear. Writing on his personal website over the weekend, Herman said, quote, whether it was filing stories from war zones or pressing presidents and other leaders in palaces for answers on major geopolitical issues, I always understood that my duty was not to power, but to VOA's global audiences, especially in countries without a free or developed press. Many of our colleagues, he notes, risked their lives to get the story right. Journalists whose voices were sometimes the only source of truth in their native languages. He says, I've met many in our audience who told me VOA gave them their first taste of freedom, led to their decisions to defect from authoritarian lands, or that they now speak our language because of VOA's Learning English broadcasts. Destroying VOA, he notes, along with Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty and Radio Free Asia, is a national security issue. These entities, funded by the American people, have been among the most effective instruments of American soft power, a bridge to those who may never set foot on our soil but understand our values because they heard them in one of the dozens of languages in which we broadcast. To eliminate these institutions, notes Steve Herman, turns our backs on those around the world who have counted on us. It is to surrender a unique platform that no other country can replicate. It was never just about America's voice, he says. It was about America's integrity. There will be celebrations, he notes, in the autocratic halls of power this weekend in Moscow, in Minsk, in Beijing, Pyongyang, and Tehran. They will cheer the totally ridiculous excuses that it was necessary to burn down USAGM because its broadcast outlets have become riddled with spies, as Carrie Lake claimed on Twitter, and that it created false narratives. Such canards, notes Herman, were hurled at VOA during the 1950s red baiting and again under a previous short-lived USAGM politically appointed leadership, referring back to Michael Peck under Donald Trump's first administration. You know, the one who broke the laws. All at VOA, says Steve Herman, who swore an oath to the Constitution, strove daily to live up to our charter, to be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. To effectively shutter the Voice of America is to dim a beacon that burned bright during some of the darkest hours since 1942, Steve Herman concluded, adding Veritatem Delexi. Translation, I loved the truth. Steve Herman joins us next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Yep. At String of Pearls by Glenn Miller and his orchestra. It was the number one song on the American charts back on February 1, 1942, as Nazi Germany was expanding its control over Europe and parts of North Africa. The U.S. had officially joined the war effort less than 2 months earlier, the day after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. So why is February 1, 1942 so important today? Well, I will explain that in a moment. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. At what is nothing less than an extraordinary and unprecedented moment in modern American history, as I see it. Regular listeners will likely know that in recent days we've been trying to figure out exactly why Donald Trump is so voraciously dismantling the U.S. federal government and arguably its U.S. constitutional order along with it from top to bottom, despite the broad unpopularity of doing so among the American people, including many of his own voters. We've discussed a number of potential answers to that question, including one that is itself a question, as asked by Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon during a recent confirmation hearing in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Merkley, as we reported at the time a week or so ago, asked the two nominees who were testifying, one to be Trump's Deputy Secretary of State, the other tapped as his ambassador to NATO, quote, is President Trump a Russian asset? Before the senator went on to cite a number of Trump's actions that seemed to benefit Russian President Vladimir Putin, particularly regarding Russia's invasion of our ally and its sovereign neighbor, Ukraine. Before the U.S. senator then asked the two nominees, quote, what else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Trump hasn't yet done? Well, over the weekend, it seems, the White House arguably came up with an answer to that question. They might shut down the worldwide broadcasts by Voice of America and its affiliated sister networks overseen by the U.S. Agency for Global Media, news networks that have been broadcasting around the globe without interruption for more than 80 years since World War II, now in about 60 different languages, with the legally mandated mission to, quote, serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of accurate, objective, and comprehensive news to what is now some 300 million people each week, particularly broadcasting into autocratic nations or where democracy is at threat and where real news and accurate information is stifled or restricted altogether by strongmen regimes. That is what the U.S. Agency for Global Media, or USAGM, the parent agency of Voice of America, Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, and the Middle East Broadcasting Networks and many others were mandated to do. But on Saturday, this past weekend, they were largely shut down following an order on Friday night signed by USAGM's White House advisor, Carrie Lake, Donald Trump's nominee to head up Voice of America, even though she's not officially in that job yet. Dead air or music has been playing across many of those worldwide airwaves ever since, as about 1,300 journalists, producers, and support staff were placed on immediate leave over the weekend. Longtime journalist, author, and VOA correspondent Steve Herman has been a friend and helpful source of information on this program, going as far back as 2011 in the terrifying days following the deadly earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster in Fukushima, Japan, when Steve, as Voice of America's Northeast Asia Bureau Chief at the time, was one of the very first journalists to actually enter the crippled, melted-down Fukushima Daiichi nuclear facility just days, if not hours, after the disaster. In the ensuing years, after decades in Asia as VOA correspondent and bureau chief in India, Korea, and Thailand, traveling to and reporting from some 75 countries, including from combat zones, civil uprisings, and areas struck by major natural disasters, Herman returned stateside, first to become VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent at the State Department and then Voice of America's White House bureau chief before becoming the U.S.-funded network's chief national correspondent and author of a book documenting his time at the White House called Behind the White House Curtain, a senior journalist's story of covering the president and why it matters, a book which he last joined us last summer in studio to discuss. Well, just over 2 weeks ago, on February 28 this year, the U.S. Agency for Global Media notified Herman that he was being suspended or placed on, quote, excused absence, while his social media posts were supposedly investigated, whatever that means. In the notification, as Herman explained at his personal website, steveherman.press, when placing him on suspension, the U.S. AGM cited an executive order signed by President Trump, which states, in part, failure to faithfully implement the president's policy is grounds for professional discipline, including separation. About 2 weeks later, more than 1,000 of Herman's colleagues appear to have been forced to join him in that separation from Voice of America over this past weekend as VOA fell silent for the first time since Glenn Miller's String of Pearls was the nation's top song on February 1, 1942, the day that VOA began broadcasting nonstop until this past weekend in what was initially to be a counter to Nazi propaganda in Europe during World War II, with its very first program at the time delivered in German. Over the weekend, Herman penned what he described at his personal website as a requiem for Voice of America, which he characterized as a, quote, voice that carried a nation's conscience. He observes, quote, to effectively shutter the Voice of America is to dim a beacon that burned bright during some of the darkest hours since 1942. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Steve Herman, who I think, at least on paper, is still VOA's chief national correspondent. Steve Herman, thanks for taking the time for us today amid this extraordinary moment, what I'm sure is no small amount of madness and sadness and confusion out there among you and your colleagues and so many who understand the critical importance of that currently dimmed beacon, sir.
Brad, thanks for the introduction. You remember more about my career than I do myself.
Well, I've been following you a long time, and you've been busy. You've always been pretty frank, able to speak freely on this program over the years. I know that, however, now you have some personal restrictions on what you can and can't say, legally and professionally, I guess, given what's going on regarding your suspension and now USAGM's mass stand-down order for Friday night. Hopefully the listeners understand those restrictions. But before we get into your thoughts on the importance of the VOA mission and what is now lost, at least for now, as it and its sister networks around the world have fallen silent, what can you tell us first about how you're holding up, about your personal situation, and why you were initially told that you were being suspended at Voice of America after decades of service there?
Yes, Brad, you outlined it pretty well. All I can tell you is, while I was obviously concerned about what was happening at the end of February, it was 10 times the gut punch what happened on Saturday when all of my colleagues were suspended. And our contractors, there's about 550 contractors, and those include journalists and you know, editors, reporters, technicians, engineers, the whole gamut. And, you know, I'm sure it's probably the same at, you know, the radio stations you've worked at. We don't sort of distinguish between, you know, who's a full-time employee and a contractor. They're all part of the team. Mm-hmm. Well, all 550 of those contractors were informed last evening that they are terminated effective March 31st.
Terminated. Are you able to sort of characterize? I assume you've been in touch with some of those colleagues since the order was initially.
Yeah, I just had lunch with some of them.
Well, can you kind of characterize the mood among? Is it shock, surprise, or was this something that was actually somehow expected in a second Trump term?
Well, about 40 of us gathered this afternoon, maybe 50. St. Patrick's Day, so you can say it was sort of a wet green lunch. You know, everybody's astonished and shocked, but every person to a man and woman is more concerned about the institution than they are with their individual job. But that is the utmost concern. Sure, people, you know, losing their jobs, as you know, mortgages to pay, kids to feed and all of that. And everybody has their personal concerns, but what's being lost is not just the livelihoods of thousands of people. When you also put into that what's happening at Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia, it's these institutions being silenced. And Brad, I've been in other countries when all of a sudden the broadcasting goes off the air, the programming, and it's replaced by music.
Mm-hmm.
And that always meant there was a coup that was occurring.
Mm.
And so what message are we sending out to the world when the regular programming of Voice of America, whether it's in English or Burmese or Swahili or Ukrainian, Russian, Chinese, Korean, Urdu, Pashto, Dari, French to Africa, all these services, when it's Monday, we're supposed to be in regular programming. There is no regular programming. Transmitters are now going off the air or they're silent. There's loop video running on some of the services streaming, you know, of sort of a promotional loop. The Voice of America is effectively silenced as of this moment.
And I want to talk a little bit more, obviously, about Voice of America's mission and what is lost. But before we get there, a few more questions. Do you have any sense, Steve Herman, of why they are doing this, either because they told you or you surmise or you've heard? Do you have any a sense of why they are doing this? It seems so, well, actually the opposite of making America great again, to be frank. But why is this going on at all, Steve?
Well, I there's a lot of theories, and you know, you and other people can speculate about which one seems the most applicable. I'm going to look at facts. The facts are that what's happening to Voice of America and the U.S. Agency for Global Media in the past few days is out of the DOGE playbook. We've seen this happen at other federal agencies, where instead of going in with a scalpel, and I don't think anybody at VOA could tell you that it can be run more efficiently or it can be reformed or, you know, a little bit more modernized, whatever. Everybody will concur with that. But to essentially, I don't even know how to describe it, extinguish the entire operation over a weekend, what's being lost is not replaceable. And it is a national tragedy. And, you know, I don't opine much, as you know.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair way to look at what's happening.
Are there efforts underway, to your knowledge, or that you can speak of, to challenge all of this legally, whether it's your own suspension personally at the network or the broader order on Friday to, you know, almost anyone else who is still there? In short, is there a pathway for this madness to somehow be undone legally, as far as you can see?
Possibly. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's legal filings in the next days to come, because we've seen that happen, you know, with other agencies like USAID, who have been effective. And there's been some glimmer of hope from the initial judicial decisions. In some cases, employees have been ordered by the agencies, that basically the agency have been ordered to take those employees back. But, you know, VOA is a little bit different. The transmitters go off the air. The programming goes off the air. We're going to have to rebuild from scratch if it's ever allowed to be brought back in its current form.
And, of course, none of us really know how long it will be off the air, whether it'll be short-lived, whether it'll be silenced for at least the rest of Donald Trump's term. You described over the weekend, Steve, in your personal newsletter, the, quote, de facto destruction of the Voice of America as nothing less than a betrayal of the ideals that gave birth to the institution and made it relevant throughout World War II, the Cold War, and in the decades after the collapse of the Berlin Wall. Tell me what you see as VOA having stood for in its 83 years of broadcasting around the world, and what you now believe will be lost if its voice remains silent, both for the short term and over the long term.
Well, as we've talked about before, Brad, on this show, what we do at VOA is following laws that were passed, that there's a charter that VOA must tell America's story. It must tell it fairly. And it is not a voice of any one particular administration. And under the firewall, which is also a law, an administration cannot tell Voice of America what to report and what not to report. It's a very unique institution, as we have found out in recent days, a very fragile institution. There are not a lot of government-funded broadcasters like this around the world where they are allowed to be independent. So when something's going on in the United States, whatever president's in power, we're not just reporting on what the president is doing and saying. We're hearing from the opposition up on Capitol Hill. We report what think tanks, NGOs, academics, civil rights groups are saying about particular actions or intended actions. I've been reporting for VOA for about 25 years, including my time as a contractor before I was a staffer. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you this. Yeah, there are some complaints once in a while. People look at a headline and think your story is biased. And I always tell them, read the story and get back to me and tell me what part of it, is not factual or biased. And I don't hear from them again. And then, of course, we all know what it's like on social media.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got an opinion, and there's a lot of trolls and bots and flotsam and jetsam out there on social media. And I have seen criticism of VOA from both the left and the right mm-hmm. over the years. And I guess that's how it should be. You know, we're never going to be totally satisfactory to people who have very strong political ideologies, because mm-hmm. that's not what we're about.
On Saturday, the White House said that Voice of America would be stripped back by executive order to, quote, ensure taxpayers are no longer on the hook for radical propaganda, Steve. I mentioned earlier in the show that Voice of America, under its charter from Congress, is lawfully disallowed from broadcasting propaganda. You mentioned that as well. We've talked about it many times on this show. How was that mandate actually policed at the agency during, over your 25 years there? And do you have any idea? Were you given any specifics about what the administration meant, what they are characterizing as, quote, radical propaganda?
Okay, a couple of things. One, when I write a story or I put together a TV package, it's reviewed by a couple of editors before it goes out. And if there's anything political in there, it's also reviewed by a third editor who's called the balance editor, who's making sure from a political point of view that that story is fair and balanced.
Mm.
I would refer, as far as where VOA falls, or, you know, radical left, extreme right, whatever you want to call it, there's an agency, it's called Ad Fontes, AD FONTES. They're the only ones I know that publish very, very comprehensive charts of where news outlets fall on the ideological spectrum, from left across the center to the right. And then at the bottom is least factual, and at the top is most factual. And if you go look at their charts, I think some of the stuff's behind a firewall now, but you can see that VOA has been pretty much top and center for a long time. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's not my opinion. That's someone who's looking at the entire space. And again, people can draw their own conclusions. They can go to voanews.com while the site is still up, while our stories are still there, and make up your own mind about whether you feel that there's some bias or slant. I think I've said that on your program before as well.
Yeah. Elon Musk last month, whose Doge operatives apparently have been camping out at the U.S. Agency for Global Media in recent weeks, Musk said, describing Voice of America and some of the sister networks as, quote, "It's just radical left crazy people talking to themselves while torching $1 billion a year of U.S. taxpayer money." You got a response to that?
Well, go talk to the hundreds of millions of people who listen to VOA, listen to Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, or watch the TV programs, or go online to check the news. Obviously, we're not just talking to ourselves. We have a huge audience, which is not, they're not just made up numbers. And again, dollar for dollar, U.S. international broadcasting funded by the government, whether it's totally 100% under the government, but with a firewall, or their grantees like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, people who study this, public diplomacy, they will tell you that in terms of soft power, VOA and these other broadcasters are probably the best bang for the buck out there in terms of soft power of the United States.
Finally, having covered, you know, other nations where you said, for example, the state media began playing music and you knew what that meant, that a coup was underway. You've been here stateside now for the last decade or so, I guess, covering the White House, State Department and so forth. How would you characterize the coverage that you've seen of this moment that is actually going on, the coverage from other outlets, corporate outlets? Are they getting it right? You know, a lot of us are, you know, sort of struggling, including here on the show, to try to fairly and clearly and truthfully report what's going on, but also issue a warning bell for what we are seeing take place before our eyes. I'm wondering how you would cover this if you were covering it in another country, and if you think that the U.S. media is up to the task right now.
Well, we have to make a distinction, of course, Brad, between public media and private commercial media. And if I was running a commercial network, I would know that my job is going to depend on ratings, right? It's like a baseball manager. I don't have a winning record. I'm not going to be there the next season, not no matter how well I know baseball or how nice of a guy I am, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different ball game over there. We've been blessed in our you know, sphere until now to not have to worry about whether we're slanting things left or right, or whether, you know, we have high ratings, mm-hmm. or you know, commercial revenue, right? Advertising. Mm-hmm. So to some degree, it's apples and oranges. You know, right now in the United States, there's this debate, and I think you're going to see this more with the Federal Communications Commission, about what should fall under the purview of the government and what should be subject to review. And you know, there's lots of court cases that are, you know, going on against certain broadcasters across the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. So that's probably a topic for another hour one of these days, but I'm probably not the right guest for that. What I will tell you is when I came back to the United States in 2016, after a quarter of a century overseas, I had reverse culture shock, and I was really surprised to see how divisive the country was. Mm. And even among my family and friends, that the middle seemed to have disappeared. And unless you ticked all the boxes over here or on the other side, on a variety of subjects, you risked being ostracized in society. And, you know, everybody talks about how tense Thanksgiving dinners have been for families and, in recent years because these split families down the middle. So, I mean, personally, that's been very worrying to me. But it may be that, you know, I sure hope we're not headed towards a period where things get worse before they start to get better in that regard.
Well, that's what I fear. I join you in that fear. Steve Herman, good luck in the days ahead, amigo. And thank you, by the way, for the insight you brought to this program over the years, the important reporting, obviously, you've done over the decades at VOA. And best of luck in this fight to keep the critical voice of America and its sister networks be, as you described it, so beautifully, the beacon of freedom that they have been to so many over so many years around the world. Thanks for taking time for us today, Steve. I believe you're over at Blue Sky now as well, at News Guy. Is that your moniker over there?
Blue Sky at News Guy.
Okay.
You can find me on a Substack as well, and you know, Mastodon and Threads and Facebook and all of that. But I have to agree with some other people in journalism recently that Blue Sky is a pretty neat stress-free platform for
now. For now.
For now.
He's newsguy.bsky.social. You can find him over there. You can find his work at voanews.com if you act quickly while it's still there. Otherwise, his private website is steveherman.press, where I strongly urge you to sign up for his NewsGuy newsletter. He is
at Substack. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is, or was, I'm not sure, the chief national correspondent and formerly the voice of America's White House bureau chief, Steve Herman. Always great speaking with you, my friend. Good luck.
Oh, Brad, and his book. His book.
Yes. Let me plug the book.
Thank you.
VOA's White House bureau chief. He writes about that work in Behind the White House Curtain, a senior journalist story of covering the president and why it matters. There you go.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, sir. All right. Great to talk to Steve. I actually, when I called him over the weekend, I was not sure he would be available or able to talk on air.
Yeah, this seemed very risky to me. So.
You know, he's never shy. He's kind of fearless, in truth. And I know that I believe that he's been talking. A bunch of media outlets have been reaching out to him, 60 Minutes, New York Times, AP, and so forth. I hope they give the story the coverage it deserves. Again, I think he's fearless. He has reported from dozens of different nations over
the
years.
Yes.
War zones, the language. I mean, he was the guy. He was like the first civilian to walk into Fukushima after the nuclear plant melted down.
It's true. Now, I really hope that that Steve's words here help to demystify the Voice of America work that they do, that so people understand and to counter the lies and disinformation about Voice of America that Republicans have been pushing for decades because they don't like the idea that they just basically tell you the facts.
And
that's it.
And let me note, not all Republicans. There have been Republicans who have supported this effort because, you know, like I mentioned, Radio Free Asia, you know, for example, also under the purview of USAGM, you know, counters what they see as the gravest threat to the world, Chinese Communist Party and so forth. And they serve Radio Free Asia as a counterbalance to that.
Right.
They're not to put out propaganda, but they counter propaganda with truth and facts. And anyone who has read VOAnews.com, followed Steve Herman's work, would know that. I didn't know, as he pointed out, that you know, his work has got to go through so many filters to make sure it meets the letter of the law before it's published or put out.
It's such a stupid and colossal waste of taxpayer dollars. I mean, this took decades to build. Voice of America was, as he noted, a key example to people listening around the world in their own language to understand the values of, you know, journalistic integrity and what what it means to include dissent and how that's okay and the world doesn't end and you don't have to arrest everybody. And it's okay to let people know what is actually going on, not just in their own country, but around the world in ways that they could not get in their own, you know, authoritarian government-run countries.
And so when repressive regimes fall, the people trying to stand up democratic regimes have some understanding of what they should look like, what they should be shaped like, what the media should sound like and look like, et cetera. So the people who do not understand it and do not understand the important role the Voice of America has played since February 1, 1942, who think it's just, you know, U.S. propaganda or something, really don't understand what it is actually all about. And I'm afraid it is those people who now control the White House and who think they control the U.S. Agency for Global Media and Voice of America, even though that is dictated by law, not by Carrie Lake or Donald Trump.
Exactly. And also, just one more thing. Good old Project 2025 actually lists, and it's, you know, that right-wing manifesto, it actually lists NPR and PBS and also Pacifica Radio and Voice of America for targeting, for removal, for attacks, for any kind of dismantling that they can do. So, yeah, Pacifica Radio, which is the parent network of KPFK and many of our affiliates, is also on that target list. They're going after nonprofit news outlets that that aren't slaves to ratings and can't be easily manipulated.
So if you tune in someday to KPFK, our flagship station here in Los Angeles, or any of our Pacifica affiliates around the nation, and you hear music playing, as Steve Herman said, usually in other countries when they hear that over state-run media, when they hear the music playing, they know that a coup is underway. And I think it's fair to say at this point in this country,
something's going on.
A coup is underway. Mm. All right, we got to get out. My thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. My thanks again, of course, to Steve Herman of, or formerly of, Voice of America. That is unclear. To our board operator, Wendell the Handyman Handy. And our producer, Desi Doyen, and of course, as I said, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we have ever done since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at brandblog.com, a service made possible by those of you who support our efforts. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you will find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.